Welcome to the UX of Diversity podcast. I'm Stephen Ruiz.
And I'm Shayna Alquist.
The podcast is a blend of narrative and interviews, all centering around issues surrounding diversity and inclusion. We will cover issues surrounding gender, race, LGBT, and other forms of diversity, including age.
Although we'll emphasize diversity in the technology space, we'll also be drawing from fields including HR, academia, consulting services, and more. In this episode of the UX of Diversity podcast, I speak with Shar Goodzifar, CEO and founder of the Helpkin app, which helps parents swap babysitting responsibilities with one another. Shar and I talk about everything from how women are responsible for a lot of the informal work that holds up society and how Helpkin might help, to what it's like to be a man with no children who's single, developing an app for moms, and the amount of empathy and user research that requires. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as we do. So, I'm Shayna Alquist here today with Shar Goodzifar. Shar, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, before we jump into what you do, I would love to just tell a little story about how you and I met. So, I met you first at a co-working space here in Santa Monica, which is where we're actually recording this episode. And I had just had my baby and I was coming back to work for the first time working for myself. And I see this flyer up on the wall that's like, it takes a village. And I don't remember the exact phrasing. And of course, I'm sure you do, but it was this promise of swapping babysitting services with friends that you already had. And I'm like, oh my God, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And so it turns out you were the proprietor of that product, and here we are. So can you tell us a little bit about Helpkin?
Yeah, of course. So Helpkin is an app for parents to trade babysitting with their friends to save money on childcare. And we're now expanding into pets as well and launching in all 50 states in 2 months on August 1st.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, so can you walk me a little bit through... I know this isn't the first iteration of the product, and I know you've done a good job at listening to your users and responding to some of their concerns. So can you walk me through what an earlier version of this looked like and what the current version of it looks like?
Definitely.
Every entrepreneur's favorite thing is to look at the first version.
Definitely. So I was not proud of my first version, which means I was doing it right. And it was one of those where I gave up very quickly on even sharing it with people, but I had to learn very fast that no, keep sharing it and keep asking why you aren't using it. And so the first version of the app I had created with an ability to both meet local users as well as do the facilitating of the trades with your friends that you already do know. And what I realized very quickly is that those are two very big problems that I was trying to solve. For meeting people near you, the biggest problem is trust. And you would want to figure out every little reason of trust, like why I care about this person, better than any product out there. So that would mean you would want to see mutual friends. You would want to see if your kids go to the same school. What do you have in common with this person?
And this is especially in not just meeting new people, but meeting new people to take care of your kids.
Exactly. So the number one reason of having to trust a person. So that was a big problem. And the second problem is, well, if it's only with people I know, well, yes, that really now helps with the barrier of trust, but now it's the social awkwardness or guilt of asking. So that's really the problem we have to solve. Why would my friends get on here? What makes them feel incentivized to want to do this? What's their motivation? As well as, why wouldn't I just text my friends to ask? And so that also becomes another question to solve. But one of my designers told me, well, when it comes to meeting another person to leave my kid alone with them, it takes about 3 to 6 months on average for me to build enough trust with that person. And a lot of the answer I kept hearing was, well, I can count the amount of people I trust with my kid on one hand, right? So that totally makes sense to me. And so I realized, why don't we go to the other version, which is, okay, it is for only people you already know, people you already trust, and that's the version that we're launching coming soon. And that way, we could launch it here in Santa Monica, and you could find out about it and be the first person to download the app in New York. And you could create your own village and create your own network. So now it becomes a productivity tool for you to build your own village. And that allows us to also help solve the problem of growth, because now on the back end, we can see, okay, there's a whole bunch of users in Ithaca in New York or in Wichita, Kansas that have just popped up. Now we can release that version of, okay, meet more families near you, because there's enough users there that solves that chicken and egg problem that online dating apps or that dating apps have a lot too.
Yeah, I think actually, as you say that, I remember hearing that Dog Vacay, which is now defunct, unfortunately, they had the same problem of, not a problem, but if somebody in Ithaca wanted to start watching dogs, guess what? Dog Vacay was in Ithaca. And so if you're trying to control a two-sided marketplace, that can be really challenging. But it sounds like you're using that as an advantage of, like, you can just leverage that tiny little social network, and then you can use that to then expand into meeting new people that you don't already know.
Correct. Because that is the number one place that you actually, in this scenario, trust other people. It's friends of friends. It's, oh, do you know someone who... It's the references, the reviews from people you already trust is the number one way that parents would trust more people. Different problems with pets, though, like I mentioned to you before in an earlier conversation, which is you're more willing to meet people that are locally because you don't want to have to burden your friends to have to drive 10 miles to just feed your pets or to watch them. You'd rather find someone local who can help let the dogs out, who's in your neighborhood, who's in your apartment complex or condo complex.
Yeah, actually, now that you say that, Dog Vacay, I think they mentioned that the parameters for distance by city also varied a lot. So in New York, for instance, you wanted someone in your building to watch your dog versus like half a mile away was really far versus in LA, half a mile is like a completely acceptable
That's
distance.
That's so easy. Yeah, exactly. Half a mile, it's like, wow, it was 0 feet away.
Yeah, exactly. No, and what I think is interesting about this, to move back a couple steps, I think it's really interesting to think about the systems in which we all live. And to think about who was in power when a lot of those systems were developed, right? So you can imagine that, like, stereotypical 1950s nuclear family is like the dad works and the mom's at home making pie, you know, all that good stuff. And they live in the suburbs, the American dream. No, but you think about the institutions that were created for caregiving at that time, right? You have school days that go 6 hours, that's not a full work day. You don't really have childcare because maybe the mom's taking care of them. And then over time, women entered the workplace, but it's like we didn't fix these systems. So now every time someone has a kid, it's like they have to create their own solution from scratch of like, oh my God, like, how are we going to find childcare? And well, can you take leave? And if you do, how much money are we going to lose? So I think this is a really interesting solution for like thinking about the way our society functions now, being realistic, we don't have enough solutions for people to find childcare. And I think this is really, really cool for providing like one alternative option for caregiving support, really. I love the idea of leveraging communities that we already have and using that as one potential solution for this whole system that I think is probably due for an update is like a good way to look at it. No, and I thought one thing that's also interesting is I know that caregiving responsibilities tend to fall on women a little bit more than men. So I know we talked a little bit before about parenting and how that can be a burden, but a burden, that's, I love you, son. No, no, how parenting can be a responsibility and right, having more of a village to help you with that is helpful. But I know you've mentioned to me in the past that Helpkin's also looking to help with other kinds of caregiving, like you're saying, taking care of pets and maybe eventually elder care. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Definitely. So for me, I've always wanted to create a place where we could come together for the biggest care needs in our lives. So that is, for me, the biggest pain point was for parents that have kids and need that support. That was the biggest one because kids can't be left alone like pets can during the day while they go to work, right? Yeah. Kids literally need someone there 24/7. And to think of that concept of once you have a kid, you've gone from being not a parent 24/7 to being a parent 24/7. And for every single day of every single waking minute of your life and sleeping because you don't sleep, right? Like every like 1.5 hours and then you're back to that waking moment again.
Oh God.
And elderly in the future as well. So to me, it's the society that we live in. I want us to recreate the community that we all want. We drive for connection. What we're doing when we look down at our phones is we're looking at Instagram, we're looking at Facebook, we're trying to see where other people are, what they're doing. But in the end, what are we going for? We're wanting to be there, wanting to feel that connection, wanting to do it. So I've wanted to use technology because technology has been pulling us further and further apart as people. I want to use technology to help bring us closer together and get offline some more. So that's where care for kids, pets, and elderly does come into play. And it's our responsibility to do it. And to go back to your point on the roles, to me, I have had to look at what are some of my competitors doing out there. So The concept of Help Kid is based off of babysitter co-ops, which babysitter co-ops are a group of families in a community that say, well, why should we pay a potentially less experienced babysitter, you know, $15, $20 an hour to babysit my kids when there are other parents nearby that I could trust? Why don't we start an exchange system? And so they're co-ops. And that is the concept I call very Berkeley and still it's still kind of stuck up there. And I wanted to bring that to the mainstream. Well, one of those things is you need to earn this digital currency like Monopoly money in order to be able to get enough points, quote unquote, to spend with your local co-op to earn babysitting and spend it. So what they did there is create an entire economy where you need to have money in order to spend it. But in the world we live in, there are people that we trust in our own village, in our own network, that say they want to help, but do we actually take them up on it, or are they just being polite, is one of the biggest questions. But when it comes down to it, 1 in 8 couples in the U.S. struggles to maintain a pregnancy. You have gay couples, right? 1 in 10 are LGBT in the U.S. So you have empty nesters, you have people, and that's kind of, for me, the big picture of the ecology of our planet, the ecology of community. It's, we are supposed to take care of each other. There's a reason people, everything exists. Why is we're overpopulated as a globe? It's time for us to come together to help the kids that do exist. And that's where it really comes back to the, it takes a village to raise a child and the tribe, thinking back to like African culture, thinking of cultures all around the world where if a baby's crying, you don't just point to that kid and say, pick up your kid.
Yeah.
We pick up the kid and we nurse the kid. You know, it takes a village.
Yeah, totally. No, and I think that's so interesting. I think American society in particular, but I think a lot of places, right, we've become so isolated from one another, and you do see this loss of community. Like
we don't know our neighbors.
No, we definitely don't.
Nobody, it's like, oh, next door? No, we don't
yeah,
know who they
totally.
Are.
Yeah, totally.
Down the street? Nope, we don't.
No, totally. No,
Eyes down. Keep on the phone, apparently.
Yeah, totally. No, and I think about, you know, we all live in our nuclear families and our houses that are separated. Even if we're in an apartment building, like you're saying, the goal is to talk to one another, essentially. And I think people even talk about that as like, you better not make friends with your neighbors, because then what if something awkward happens?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's all like preventative. No, but I think it's really interesting, this idea that we used to be part of these closer knit communities that have since disappeared. And I love this idea of using technology to find solutions to make that happen now. And like you're saying, because you might have heard of the babysitting co-ops in Berkeley, but that's not a solution most people are utilizing, right?
Yes.
That's really cool.
So that actually brings me to, I think you brought this up to me before, which was today's village or today's network doesn't have to be exactly what it was when we think of old town America, where we didn't have technology. So our neighbors literally were our support system because we had the telephone, we had the home phone number, you know? So at that point, it was, you had to call someone up or how they could physically get to pick up and drop off. But in today's world, our village has come a little bit spread out. But with technology, it doesn't mean we still don't have that connection or still don't have that friend network. We're just a little bit farther and we all have cars. We all have cell phones, smartphones, so we can reach each other at the drop of a hat.
That's interesting. It's almost like the distributed tribe, right?
Yep.
It's like you and other Westworld fans can obsess on Reddit for 6 hours a day, but there's no one by you at all.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. So Shar, I know we jumped into a lot of the weeds on the product. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and why you started Helpkin?
Definitely. So I would say Helpkin was always in the making. I actually grew up as a gay man in Orange County, which is very conservative in California. And I've always wanted to have that white picket fence family, 2 kids, a dog, you know, a husband. And so I had 2 best friends of mine who became single mothers as freshmen in college. And I was always happy to help. And the thing was, is just because they had kids doesn't mean that we were not still best friends. That was my concept. I was like not going to banish this relationship. And the kids, I actually loved them. I was happy to help. I was happy to help them. And I loved the kids. So it only made sense to me to want it to babysit whenever they wanted help. And not to for it to feel like a burden, because why wouldn't I? That was the concept. They couldn't pay me $40 or $50 to babysit their kids. And so that was where the seed was planted. Then I later worked at a tech startup where there were about 80 employees and about 5 of them were mothers as well. And we would always go out after work to socialize, hang out, get to know each other. And the mothers always would, but they could never because they were moms. And being a parent in today's world is like having 3 full-time jobs. So I knew they wanted to come join us, but they couldn't. So I saw that there was something here, and I was spitballing the idea with one of the moms that worked there and decided that there was something much bigger here than myself and bigger than most of us that I work with, and we had to create something bigger than me. And that probably leads into one of the topics I think would be good for this podcast, which is designing a product that is not, that you're not the major user for. And I've had to go back and forth about that. I don't know if you want to introduce that topic or your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, so totally. So I guess I'll back up just to say, so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on this podcast is because the reason I want to explicitly state this is it's a gap that I feel makes sense, but needs to be bridged for a lot of other people. So essentially, Shar, right, you are a childless gay man designing an app for moms.
Exactly, correct.
So that seems unusual, right? But what I like about that and what I think is interesting to our audience is this idea of designing with empathy, right? So when I think about traditionally the people who have been in power versus the people who are powerless, the people in power, if they're not like the people who are powerless, so you could think of like rich white men versus like women coming up, right? There needs to be empathy in that process of understanding like who you're really making it for to make a good product. And I think you're a great example of, because you in some ways aren't the target audience, even though this is a human problem, I'm wondering how you've worked around that so that you can design with empathy.
That's a very good point. And I would say it is a benefit for me to actually be able to come in with that angle that people wouldn't expect, because it's exactly what you said. When I'm designing this product, I get to do the user research that should be done in a product without having goggles on too much of being just that person, being a single mother or being a mother in general. And I get to actually ask a bunch of users their feedback and listen to what they're saying in regards to, well, we keep asking each other, when can we make it happen? Next Tuesday or next Saturday? I don't know if they're just being polite or if they really are trying to figure out their schedules. So with this platform, half of it is saying that there's an app for that and saying, if your friends get on it, download an app, create a profile and put their availability. It really means that they actually do want to help you. So that eliminates that guilt factor. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the people that do mean they want to. You just really have to figure out schedules. So because of that, we can share availabilities in our app so you don't have to really work on that problem either. And that is something that I came up with that stance of not being just the blinders on, by talking to all the parents and seeing that that is a very common problem everyone's having and using technology to help solve that issue. As far as that imbalance of power, that's such a big issue to dive into. I would say it takes a lot of listening and learning, because there's no perfect answer for anything. There's never, even me considering myself very progressive in regards to this world I'm trying to create with this company, it's still always asking questions of, is this what you mean? For a great example is this podcast where you're asking me about being a gay childless man, and it's wondering, is that okay to even talk about? Is it okay to even ask you?
Yeah.
Right? In this world of PC, but at the same time, understanding where that came from of, we are trying to move forward and all trying to give each other a space in this world to make it more equally. And that's one of the big reasons of what my background is. It's social justice, social equality, and especially in income equality as well as human rights. So I founded a campaign in college to help with equal rights for same-sex marriage. And then I helped do marketing for the legal team that won same-sex marriage rights in all 50 states.
Wow.
When they had nothing going on. So it was one of those things where if I saw an issue that the people needed to hear about and we could change faster, for me, the big answer was, if I knew I was changing or saving one person's life, just growing up, like I said, gay in Orange County, knowing that the reason I was the only out person in my entire high school of 3,000 people, that there are people out there who were living a lie, who were not being... I was grateful to be able to come out when I was 14, but there are people who are not getting to live in their own skin. And I knew that the suicide rate of LGBT youth, and just realizing if I could move that faster, if I could get visibility through media and let people know it's okay, especially through same-sex marriage rights, that was me making my impact and actually making this world a better place. And that can be translated into every human rights issue. I do remember in history class, it was the only class I failed because I couldn't read another story with another John Smith being that was just the whole entire textbook. For me, what was interesting was the 4 pages of slavery or the 3 pages of women's rights or the paragraph on LGBT history. That was all that was really interesting to me because I understood this major white story. And the only way that we could really move forward is through conversations, getting to know people, and maybe accepting that we're not always right all the time, right? That's kind of, I feel, one of the big problems of when you have that status of power to listen and understand why, because it's not always easy. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so much there. That's amazing. No, I think you made a great point about, because in a way you're not designing for yourself, even though it's a problem you can empathize with, you get to come in without the blinders and really get to ask questions and listen. I wonder too also if you want to talk about, so you said you're Persian. Are you an immigrant? I can't remember.
I'm not. I was actually born in the States,
oh, cool.
But my parents both immigrated here. Yeah. I have a lot of cultural diversity. But one thing I do want to mention actually is what you just said. It's not actually just the blinders. One of the things is when you're designing or creating a product for when you're not that major character, it is more fulfilling and more rewarding. Because that was a problem I constantly had to face. When you're building a startup, one of the big issues is if you are creating a company or a product that's not for yourself and you are working 80-hour weeks, right, to avoid the 40-hour week, but it gets lonely and it gets difficult, you have to ask yourself, well, people always told me that you should design a product that would really solve a problem that you have because you would be the best person to do it. But at the same time, why do we do charity? Why do we give back to others? Which is more rewarding in the end, when we're just fulfilling something for ourselves, or if we're fulfilling something for something greater than us, something that we see that there's a problem and a wrong that we can help right? To me, that's even more fulfilling. And that's what I constantly remind myself is seeing a problem that I am grateful I don't have to face. Because I think to myself, well, what if people that become parents out of nowhere, this is their new life. And I just can't imagine that it's our responsibility to help them as opposed to be like, that's your problem, what are mine? It's really goes into that whole empathy question.
That's interesting. And I wonder, had the advice that you should solve your own problem is so ubiquitous in Silicon Valley. Do you ever have any self-doubts about Helpkin along the way because of that advice?
I would say I did initially, and I probably still do. But at the same time, I have to remember there's no perfect answer. Because now, seeing it from the other side, I can see, well, people in that problem, because sometimes my designers or developers will also create things in the app because that's how it affects them. And I'll go out and do some user research and present screenshots of the exact research that people will tell me and present them back to my team, and they'll say, oh wow, I didn't even think about these two things. Yeah, that's because you have just a dog and we are also working towards cats. They're different problems. So it's always a constant struggle of being like, well, I'm grateful I'm in this because there's no perfect. Neither one's perfect. The grass is always greener on the other side. So you can just pick one, stick with it, and realize you are doing something for the world. In fact, this problem came to me and I thought to myself, wow, I could let this move on to the next person and let them solve it, but I didn't want to. I wanted to actually solve the problem. So that's why I started the company.
Well, and I'm curious too, have you had any challenges with, I mean, so not like raising money is super easy anyway, but have you run into problems with convincing investors or other, you know, board members that you're the right person for this, given that you're not the single mom that they might expect walking in?
I would say that yes, it is more challenging because you are in front of a group of people that look nothing like you and don't have the experiences for you, and that you're trying to sell them on the fact that today's world would rather share free care with each other than spend money for it, when they're just trying to find out who's going to pay for that. So for me, I have to first start with the fact that it is a problem. And in order to do that, it's know your numbers, do the research, do the work, and really show up for yourself, because one of Henry Ford's famous quotes is, you know, if you think you can or you can't, you're right. So that is kind of one of the things you have to go in with and realize you will always have things against you. And I feel like that sounds very cheesy to a point where I see those videos or motivational things, inspirational quotes on Instagram. But at the same time, it adds to it. Because you will always have roadblocks and everyone will have what they are. And if you don't at least have a the right mindset and a growth mindset associated to it, to whatever hand you're dealt, that's one thing that you can control, right? There's some things you can't control, but there's some things you can. And that's your effort, energy, and work to show up, to work harder and try and convince them that, that it's a real problem. And the biggest advice I have for that is to go join an accelerator or do an incubator or do the online how to start a startup course or something to really prep you with what it will be like before you get in that room to know your numbers, to do the research and solve a problem that actually needs to get solved, not just grasping at items that you want to solve to create a startup. No, but really find a passion that you know the world needs and fix it. Make meaning in the world and then money will come. Guy Kawasaki. So
yep. That's interesting. No, and what you're saying kind of reminds me of the way that traditional stereotyping works is that if someone's an exceptional, let's say for a job application, if someone's an exceptional candidate, like really great, gender discrimination doesn't play too much of a role. It's when there's ambiguity about fit that suddenly it kind of tips things one way or the other. And so it sounds like you've been in a similar situation by coming in really prepared and really understanding how to pitch this and where the opportunity lies. You're removing that ambiguity about fit. So by coming in really prepared, it seems like you're able to get around that.
Yes.
That surprise of like, who walks in with the babysitting app?
One of the big takeaways I got from Zero to One by Peter Thiel was to study the end game and avoid competition at all costs. Always drive in the lane that, and you it's like literally driving and you're like, oh, I can turn right here. Mm-hmm. And no one's in this lane. So pick that lane. Figure it.
Well, and actually, I'd love to come back to you. You mentioned a little bit about the finances, right? So as an investor, one of the things that people will be evaluating you on is like, will this make me money? So I love the idea of using technology to make connection easier. Can you talk about the finances of that? Like how does Help Can make money in
the
future?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So when it comes down to it, people will always spend money on their kids. People will always spend money on their pets. And people will always spend money on elderly. So with Help Kid and the vision of Help Kid is up until now, the majority of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So when I think of parents or people that have to spend more money that they already don't have on someone above and beyond themselves, when they should be spending that money on their kids, pets, and elderly in regards of things they actually need, items, groceries, household items. So to me, it is through products and advertising. And I really want to bring back a local offline experience for, hey, parents, now that you actually have money, spend that money at a local date night shop. Mm-hmm. I see the future of it being the more you help your friends, the more you earn in local rewards. That the is now marketing dollars for marketing spend for local retailers. So that's kind of the big vision is if we're trying to reshape the economy and really take back the economy for the people, it involves putting, you know, every dollar you spend is the type of world that you want to create. So let it be for local economies to thrive. Because when I see it, I see mom and pop shops not being able to survive. They're still struggling. And for example, a very big problem I see with Groupon and Living Social is the big promise to small businesses is, oh, you should list on our site for 70 or 80% off of what you should charge for your experience and people will come back to you. But what we all know is that the users don't come back. They find another Groupon. They look for another spa or massage or experience through Groupon. That's another 70 to 80% off. And that's because people right now cannot afford brand loyalty. So I want to be able to recreate a world where people can actually afford brand loyalty, can afford to go back to that place over and over because they're directly seeing the savings that they do have through Help Kid by saving money on pet care, elderly care, child care, and being able to spend that.
Well, I want to push back a little bit on part of that. So one of the things that I struggle with, we talked before, I think offline about, there's this loneliness epidemic, right? We're all super lonely. And I've thought about this for years, like how does a business solve that problem? And one of the problems I've run into is that people aren't willing to pay for social connection, right? So like, I'm happy to pay $20 to go to the movies. But if I was going to say like, sure, come over to my house and me and 10 friends will cook dinner, it'll be $20. It's like $20 just to go to your house? But you're having a more like intimate and authentic experience there. But we haven't really figured out a way to attach like a dollar amount to it. So I'm wondering how you think about, even though we're willing to pay for childcare, it's almost like we're only comfortable with that paid formal system.
Well, that actually goes to a very big question, which is a lot of the work I've had to do, which is understanding why money is not inherently evil, mm-hmm. and understanding that it's what we use as a barter system. It's I grow watermelons and you want watermelons. And what can you offer me? Oh, okay, you have cows. Okay, I would like milk. So when it comes down to it, it's, well, what is that exchange rate? And it really comes down to a very simple aspect of money is not inherently evil. It's understanding that right now, the system that we live in has led to one where the average American does not have the access. And of course, this when we do that in the US, it trickles over all into the world, right? So it comes to, if we are sticking to the US dollar, for example, cryptocurrency takes too long to get into, then while we're here with the US dollar or, you know, whatever dollar the country has, because that's what we know, that's what the mainstream is still comfortable with, how can we get people to be okay with figuring out a different value trade? And for me, it's, what do your friends get value in by babysitting your kid if they don't have kids like me? Mm-hmm. I am helping you. That's my value proposition. I'm helping you because I care about you as a friend. And I love the kids. So I'm getting my baby fever filled, right? It's like my hormones are like, woo, babies. And so I get that filled. And same thing with pets. When people, I can't have pets in my apartment, but I would love to cat sit for you just because I love cats, right? When we think about baby and cat and dog videos are the number one watch thing in the world, right? We have to think of why. So we have this innate like parenting desire. So it comes down to, it is still an exchange, which is why with HelpGood, the more you help your friends, the more they'll help back. And people always ask, okay, well, what if you have a friend that isn't helping you back as much as you're helping them? What happens then?
It's like, well, what happens in real life? It's
exactly. I was like, well, you're going to stop helping them.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, it'll be a real quick offline conversation.
Yeah.
And so that's why we do have a dollar save tracker that shows you how much you're saving your friends in the average cost of babysitting or pet sitting and how much they save you. And that's our way of showing you, hello, just to let you know how much you're helping your friends, how much they're helping you. But at the same time, also realizing that you'll have a single mother with three kids who will probably need a little more help than a married couple with just one kid who has a nanny, right? So there is just an imbalance, even in the parenting world, that the barter system doesn't 100% account for. And it's that. But to go back to your original question about you're right, paying money to have that social thing. There are other ways we do pay for it. And in our aspect, it will be with a freemium subscription is another big way that we make money. You could pay to have unlocked convenience because right now it's an app for you and people you already know. So you could sync your phone calendar and have that automatically stay synced, which helps you showcase your availability to your friends to let them know when you're free or when you're not free to help babysit. So that is a premium feature that's about $10 a month or $100 a year. And when we see ourselves moving into the trusted version, it's okay, well, I would like more access to more trusted people around me. So you would like to know if you have mutual friends in common, you would like to see prime filters, you'd like to search for more people, for more access to make it easier. My goal is to make HelpGood more trusted than as if you were to meet a parent at a park. Mm. It's like, well, I'd rather go the same reason we go to online dating versus going to the bar.
Mm.
We're trying to create efficiencies. So I see that with trust too. It's, well, you could add a background check through the profile. You could say, oh, I have nanny cams in my house on the profile. And ways like that to create transparency for if we don't know our neighbors, how are we supposed to trust them? If you say, well, I have a nanny cam in my house, so you're welcome to check in anytime with your kids. These are technological advances that we can create to allow trust to be built with people we don't know. Because it sounds sometimes like a Black Mirror episode, even to me. But at the same time, we have to think about the real application. If with airplanes, with cars, if we are literally able to move wherever we want in the world, which we couldn't do 100 years ago, you know, or however many years ago, excuse me for my history. I told you I didn't study American history. Just kidding. It makes us really realize, okay, so the literal statistical likelihood of us getting to know our neighbors is less and less and less. We can move wherever we want.
That's interesting. Shar, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Where can people learn more about HelpGood?
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here. So if you go to our website, HelpGood, you'll be able to download the app, and it is going to be available for training babysitting and pet sitting with friends that you trust. And as we say at HelpGood, it takes a village.
Shar Goodsavar, thanks so much.
Thank you
very much.
You
can find more on helpkin.com, HELPKIN.